Hey everyone, I'm Brent Lambert, guest editor for Escape Pod's Black Future Month special event. Submissions have been extended to the end of April, and I'd love to see what you have. So if you had a new story you were wanting to start, or you were close to finishing one, now is the time. Find all the details at escapepod.org. Looking forward to seeing your submissions.
Welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi, a very special geek discussion episode. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Darren.
I'm Noah Richman.
And we are here to talk about Zack Snyder's Justice League and maybe a few other superhero movies from DC and Marvel along the way, because you know how these discussions kind of wander in and out of franchises and titles and favorites and favorites to hate. And so we're going to talk about Zack Snyder's Justice League. Now, for the record, I absolutely, positively hated Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. I could not watch that movie. I tried two or three times and I had to just say stop and literally curse the heavens for putting that piece of trash in our lives. And then Justice League came out and I'm like, no, you're not going to do it. And then it happened to be on TNT one day after it had already gone through its theatrical and DVD and streaming releases. And I'm like, you know, this doesn't completely suck. It's not as ridiculous as Suicide Squad, which I found entertainingly ridiculous. I actually liked Suicide Squad better than Justice League. And from what everyone's telling me about Zack Snyder's version, that is a very valid opinion. what are your thoughts, you guys? How did you approach the first Justice League? What's better or worse about the new version? And maybe we'll talk about what it means for future DC movies.
All right. So I'll start myself out by saying, first of all, I really didn't care for what Zack Snyder did with Man of Steel. I thought that he was just somebody that didn't have the right feel for what the character of Superman is supposed to represent, in my opinion, and I think in a lot of people's opinions of, you know, what Superman is. No, I think he's coming from directing Watchmen, and he is somebody that likes approaching superheroes from the point of view of deconstructing the character. And while I think that there's time and, you know, there's a certain amount of place for that, I think when it gets overdone, it starts to detract from what the character actually is. And I just don't think Superman was something that Zack Snyder had a feel for. And similarly, Batman versus Superman it was, again, more of a deconstruction of the characters than something that was really honoring the history of those characters. So I was not a fan of Justin being put in charge of the DC universe. I had a lot of trepidation about Justice League. The only reason I wanted to see the Justice League movie was because I heard Justin had been brought on to, you know, redo it. And when I saw the theatrical film, I just found unwatchable to me. It just seemed it was like being battered over the head. It was like a Transformers movie. And I blamed I blamed Zack Snyder. I thought, I heard all these fans crying about we want the Snyder cut. And I just thought, you know, no, everything that is wrong about this movie has got to be coming from Zack Snyder. I really have maybe a passing curiosity about what a Snyder cut would be, but it's still not going to be a good movie. I've already seen what he's done with the DC universe. And I almost had to be taken by the hand to, you know, be forced to start to sit myself down to start watching Zack Snyder's Justice League. And within an hour, I was completely interested.
Wow.
Well, you know, it's funny you talk about Man of Steel, and I remember specifically I was so shocked that DC or Warner was giving him the keys to the franchise. But I will say this, when Man of Steel, the trailer first hit, I was blown away. I was like Terrence Malick had done a DC movie. Mm-hmm. I don't remember that trailer, but it was like it was really just amazing. It was like
I downloaded the high def version of that trailer to my computer because the sound of it, the speeches that Jor-El did at the opening, that still makes me think about getting teary. And I liked Man of Steel. I did. I thought it wasn't 100% the ideal of Superman. And recently somebody on Twitter said, by all rights, the Superman in Man of Steel should never have become Superman because Jonathan Kent kept telling him, don't help people, keep yourself secret. So that person never should have become Superman with that upbringing. I'm like, I can't argue with that. And that's not something I didn't think about. But I liked Man of Steel.
It's a different take on him. I mean, I got to be honest with you. When Kevin Costner, you know, well, I mean, he was such a small role in that movie. But when those words were spoken, I was like, Jesus, this is like a whole paradigm shift of Superman. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, when you fast forward to the end, when he snaps that dude's neck, that was obscene to me. And I was... You know, it ruined for me a really enjoyable film to that point. I felt betrayed almost, you know. But Zack Snyder has been taking risks. You know, it's pretty evident.
So, Man of Steel, I was able to actually get my wife to go see that movie with me based on that trailer.
Oh, boy.
And after we came out of the film, she was... so great. She said, I have been a victim of a bait and switch.
You know what? But when you got a chance to watch Batman versus Superman and you compared it to Man of Steel, it was like, that was such a bad movie. And I agree with your opening about, you know, Batman versus Superman is just being a pile of shit, pardon my French, but it really was a bad movie. And I was... You know, when they revealed that there was going to be a Justice League following that, obviously I was thinking, well, it can't get any worse. And of course it was when we saw the Joss Whedon part. And I kind of shared Noah's point that I was myself also blaming this on Zack Snyder because, you know, our sample size with Joss Whedon was that would never suggest that he would put out such a shitty product, which is why, you know, this whole 4-hour Snyder cut, I was really just, if anything, very interested to see how, you know, what it was really going to be, because, you know, it couldn't get any worse.
And my question is, everybody kept saying they wanted the footage of Justice League that had been shot that was set aside when Joss Whedon took the project over. But reading some reports, some articles that came out right before the Zack Snyder version was released, they threw $70 million at him to shoot footage that was never really shot. So all of that was new footage. It's like they reshot Justice League right then and there. Did I read all of that correctly?
Yeah.
Wow.
I want to see a documentary about this one day that actually kind of compares and contrasts both versions, because I've seen some breakdowns, you know, and it's pretty staggering that the actors were able to even find the time to do that. Obviously, the mustache dilemma with Henry Cavill. But honestly, without going further in detail, but I actually, the one thing that I take away was Cyborg, Ray Fisher's arc and his story was really touching. And if anybody got the screw job was him, I think, in Joss Whedon's movie, because I was endeared to his story and it was really really powerful. And it just blows my mind how they could take something like so real and makes the character, you know, it was like they just threw the other characters in there because, you know, we all almost know who Cyborg is.
Well, that's the thing that surprised me from everything that I read. Now, full disclosure, I have not watched Zack Snyder's version yet because I have some other, shall we say, nitpicks going on. But it sounds like he actually had a story. He didn't have a story in the original theatrical version. It was just, I was in an accident and my father used this piece of hardware they were testing to save my life. That was the entire story. You got more of a backstory on Barry Allen.
But even Barry Allen's story is actually grown too. I mean, there's this, I think the big part about why I think the original Avengers worked with Joss Whedon is he created the separation with each character and they felt fleshed out. You know, there was, And it was done very, I don't know. And I was always the opinion, man, to do a film when you have multiple characters, it just can't be easy.
And here, I have a question. Mm-hmm. Joss also did Age of Ultron. Did you think Age of Ultron was as cohesive a story as the first Avengers movie?
No.
Aha. Okay. So
I felt like that one though was, I felt that one had more influences from people in suits and like higher ups telling them they probably need to have more of this particular day because they wanted to sell some merchandise. I think that movie was paint by numbers. And that's why I think I read that he was kind of burnt out after it, but who knows? I mean, I think Joss Whedon's an asshole just from reading backstories on him. But again, that's neither here nor there. I mean, it doesn't really matter if the work he's putting out is going to be good. I just think it's amazing how you compare the Snyder and Whedon Justice League, and they're just two different movies altogether. I mean, I went out and bought it originally just because we watched it together, Noah and I did a theater, and I left the theater like numb, thinking, what the hell did I just watch? I mean, can this really be that bad? You know, and I went out and bought it just because I'm a fool to watch it again, and I just was like laughing. He goes, nope, still bad.
And for the record, I would watch a documentary about the versions of Justice League, how they got from making the first one to remaking the first one to making this new one. Mm-hmm. And if it was done with as much attention to detail as the documentaries for Deep Space Nine and Voyager have been, that would be a monumentally important piece of cinematic history to document all that.
You could actually teach a course on the variances of this with just filmmaking. I think history will show. I mean, just how, like, with the influences of money and the assumptions. And then that, like, it's just we're talking about Justice League and everyone, you know, we have these larger than life characters, Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, and trying to give them a story that's cohesive where there's enough space between each character. It's just something that's not easy to do. I don't care who you are, because we didn't have the luxury of having all these movies up to that point, like Marvel did with, you know, Thor, Hulk and all this. You just had Superman, and then we had the previous Batman history. But if for people that don't know the backstory of these characters, they're going to be going this movie cold almost.
So again, for myself, I was surprised at how quickly I got drawn in. I really liked the way that the Snyder Cut brings in this mythic and epic quality very early on. I really didn't think I was going to want Darkseid introduced right away, and I was surprised at when I see the way Snyder did it, it really did feel like Lord of the Rings and here's the Sauron character, and somehow it worked, it meshed. I really found myself wanting to see more. Now, it did later, once they started introducing the other characters, I did find it a little rough the way some of the additional characters were introduced. I'm very conflicted when it comes to Cyborg, because he has so much better of an arc in the Snyder Cut. You can really see how that character just got shunted aside in the theatrical cut. But at the same time, I am always going to have the problem that I was reading New Teen Titans, Marv Wolfman, in the 1980s.
George Perez.
And Cyborg is one of the New Teen Titans. And
there, you guys let that go, man.
and he is not this all-powerful character that can control all technology in the world and launch nuclear weapons, and he's not this all godly figure from the character that I was reading and that I relate to. And so I'm a little conflicted with, on one hand, I understand when you adapt things to the screen, particularly in a comic book world, and particularly when you're going to a mass market, there's changes and things that you have to make. And at the same time, I'm somebody that also feels like that's true. And on the other hand, there's also truth to be said about, if you're going to adapt a property, that it should be that property.
You know, it's interesting that you point that out, you know, as far as like, he has almost like an it's just godly like abilities, because, you know, his ability to sync up to any AI and speak to it, no matter where it's from. I actually kind of like it, because in this movie, he was a flawed character from his differences with his father, and then the loss of his mother. So he was a human in a lot of ways. And so that's what I identify with, you know. Here he's this man, you know, been with, who's mostly cyborg and AI, but yet, and he has this power to change the world, but yet he's still human and vulnerable and don't knows how to make the right choice. And I think that's what was so neat. It's kind of like Superman, same way, you know, he could really break a man's just by, you know, winking at him or something, but he doesn't, because he's got this ability to know what's right and wrong. The same thing I felt with, like, you know, Cyborg. And because of the way he was, he was able to make these decisions that were selfless, you know what I mean? And that's the whole point of what a hero is, you know what I mean? It's like the ability to make something, a choice that's selfless in the final battle or something. So
yeah, and again, that's where I say I'm sort of conflicted on it, because ultimately the story that they did with Cyborg was really inspirational. I mean, they really, you know, it really took something that had been just kind of a side character in the theatrical cut and made it into not only the central story of the movie, but also one that was actually moving, you know, something that you really cared about. There's just always going to be some, you know, this geek boy part of me that's going to be like, yeah, but that's not the comic book.
Yeah, well, you know what's really cool though, and the geek boy in you had to smile a little bit when they showed some of the clips later in the movie with Martian Manhunter, without getting spoilers. I didn't spoil it for anybody, but I agree with what you said about Darkseid when they first introduced him, because I mean, Darkseid, I've always been a huge, I love that character. And the way they did it, I was jumping out of my chair going, holy shit, this is really freaking cool, man. And it felt so, and I loved the attention that they gave to the Amazons. It didn't feel rushed. There was emotion there. You felt, you know, the loss of each of their sisters involved dying. It was really well done. I don't know. It just, things felt more explained and fleshed out. And because, you know, obviously it's a 4-hour movie, you have time to do all that. But it just did it really well, and the pacing was pretty good. I was surprised. Like I said, I actually vividly remember watching this thinking, Jesus, I'm actually really enjoying this. I don't know if I should apologize or I know that sounds really bad. Well, because Snyder movies can tend to be a little pretentious sometimes too. You know, he's got his little vignettes where he likes to throw in the music, you know, like the famous Aquaman scenes. Let's you know, get him without a shirt off as he's walking into the water and playing some really, you know, well, the previous with Joss Whedon's was Icky Thump from White Stripes, which I don't know. I thought was kind of cool in the trailer, but in seeing the movie, it's like, okay, this is kind of cringe. But it was interesting that the choice of music that Snyder brought in was different from what Joss Whedon used. And I think it was really more sentimental, and it really brought a little more deeper meaning to each person's backstory. It just actually felt like there was more passion put into it. I don't know. If this was the original story that he was going to tell, and this is the story and the footage that the movie theater saw, it just blows me away why they just didn't green light it. And I know he lost his daughter, and that changed everything because of it. And that's a valid reasons. But I just don't understand why they wouldn't have just shelved it for a while, or let Joss Whedon just finish what he already had started. Why change what he had done? That's what doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I would like to know whether that original agreement bringing Joss Whedon on was Joss gets to rewrite the movie and do it his way instead of just being reined in.
Hmm.
And say, hey, this is what Zach's already done. Follow this blueprint or else, because they have the ability to do that. They've done it before.
Right.
So I would like to get some clarification on how that happened. We'll probably never get it, but you know, it's one of those questions that lingers out there. How did that first Justice League become such an overcooked mess if Zack Snyder's story was there? And the only other thing I have questions about is, why is it 4 hours long? Because that would never have gone in the theaters at 4 hours.
Right. Two parts. I was thinking they did that with Avengers Endgame. I mean, this would have been, in my mind, they could have done that. And it got...
Because in Infinity War and Endgame, there was literally a 5-year jump.
Yeah, but it's not like the first time we haven't done a it's a to be continued. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you're right. That is a really long time for a movie. I mean, I know that even for seeing it at home, watching it, it was a long time. But there was always forward movement on the characters moving. And there wasn't this, the way they treated Flash, they made him like he was this like, oh, I don't want to fight. Oh, I don't want to, you know, and it was just like, it was really, I just didn't like that. I liked how they got the, I don't know, with Wonder Woman, the way they handled her in Justice League, it was kind of cringy, almost like you had to have the gratuitous shots or when Flash was falling on top of her. Mm-hmm. That was really bad. And just that, the Whedonisms, you know, the jokes that are there. And also, to be honest with you, the way they handled Steppenwolf, I mean, he's not even a main threat. And he never felt like the Thanos level, you know, the upper echelon villain. And it was never written that way in the comics either. It was almost like Galactus's archangels, you know, the ones that come out, the heralds rather, and try to establish everything before he comes down and reigns his terror. Well, that's kind of the way Steppenwolf has always been too. And the way they did that in the story was really clever too, you know, trying to win back his trust of Darkseid. But I just felt it felt more complete, and the villain felt more, you know, like this dude could really level some serious destruction. Mm-hmm. And I never felt that way with Steppenwolf. And also the look of Steppenwolf, if you watch Snyder's version as opposed to
completely changed.
Yeah, it looks, I don't know. It's a totally.
So is it safe to say, is it accurate to say that the portrayal of Darkseid and Steppenwolf in this version is closer to what we know from the comics? Because in the comics, it was always Darkseid is like Thanos and Steppenwolf is like Ronan the Accuser or one of the other, what's the other guy's name? Anyway, I'm drawing a blank. But he's like one of the hyper-powered underlings of this enigmatic intergalactic entity that is, you know, literally a planetary threat every time he puts a foot down.
It's like they took the carbon print, the blueprint. And I mean, I've always thought that Thanos and Darkseid are interchangeable anyway. And I know that Marvel was riffing on Kirby's Darkseid anyway. I've always been a bigger fan. I've always loved Thanos. Don't get me wrong. I mean, Jim Starlin's take on him was just something for the ages. But I remember as a child reading about New Gods and just loving anything Kirby's related with. I love his just his take on things. I don't know if you've being a fan of Darkseid, I always loved the Omega blasts out of his eyes, you know, because there's so many things that he can do with those, that blast. And so it was kind of cool to see that represented in the movie, even though they didn't really explain it, but you know that once he unleashes that, there's going to be some terror caused from it. So I don't know. I'm kind of like, I was nerding over the fact that Darkseid was in there and they did him well. I wanted more of it, you know. And if that was the version of Darkseid we would have got in New Gods, you know, dang it.
yes, we'll talk about that. But Noah, what do you think about the running time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the reaction that I have, you know, that Darren and I were actually just talking about before we came on. Really, I think that you just come down to the basic problem of where you're dealing with large corporations, and Marvel things happen very organically. Marvel was a comic book studio, you know, it was a comic book company that managed to get some funding together to make some movies based on its products, and the movies did well enough as standalones. You know, people still became introduced, here's this Iron Man, here's this Captain America, and then they, once they combined it all, suddenly like the roof blew off. But here on the other side, you've got, you know, the suits over at Warner Brothers. It really comes down to whoever is you're having to appease your stock investors, and they're looking to saying, well, look what they're doing, we need that. But they're not going in then and putting in the groundwork to build it up to get to where Marvel got to. You first have to have standalone properties that people care enough about to want a sequel, and then they have to care enough about for the sequel to do well for them to then want to see all the properties combined into Justice League. And they didn't do that. They just said, okay, now let's go make a Justice League. And so Snyder, I have some empathy that he's a little bit between a rock and a hard place there, in that, okay, well, how do we just get to Justice League? Well, we need a 4-hour movie in order to do that, because now we're going to try and introduce all these things. Marvel spent 8 movies mm-hmm. on introducing before they got to Avengers.
Yeah, and they also had one person pulling all of the creative strings, you know, someone right. like Kevin Feige, who'd been involved with Marvel, I guess, you know, since he was 1.5 years old. So he's well steeped in the Marvel lore, in the storylines, the creators of those storylines, those comics. He knows those characters, he knows those stories, and he was able to put out a blueprint of, we're going to do this one, then this one, then this one, and those will have the pieces we need to create the Avengers, and we go from there. I was one of those people who was very surprised that the first big Marvel movie was going to be Iron Man. I'm like, wait a minute. Nobody but us diehard Marvel fans know who Iron Man is or cares about him. What in the world? And it worked. Yep. It worked so well. And I was one of those people that came out of the theater after Iron Man going, oh my God, that's better than I expected it was going to be. And who knew, right? So the fact that Warner Brothers didn't take someone from DC or someone influenced in DC to be the helm of that ship surprises me, because if they're trying to copy what Marvel did, Kevin Feige's standing right there. All you have to do is find a, you know, DC version of Feige.
You know, they could have gone after Jim Shooter.
You think he would have done it? Would he have done it?
Who knows? But just talking about somebody who's got deep knowledge in both companies. I think the one thing, talking about Iron Man, the one thing that Marvel did right, and I don't know if who their casting directors are, but they really, I mean, getting because you're right, Iron Man is not, he wasn't a commodity that people knew unless you were like a comic nerd. But Robert Downey Jr. getting that part, it was both for good for his career too, by the way. But
That was ordained by the stars. That was serendipity personified.
But if for every Robert Downey Jr., you have the Ben Affleck being hired as Daredevil. But I think if anything, Marvel really, maybe Kevin's involvement, but their casting choices were really solid. I mean, Captain America, all of them. And I don't know about that as far as DC is concerned. I mean, I don't know how I grew to be okay with Ben Affleck. Interesting thing about Justice League, he wasn't even in his Batman costume for a god. The first, half of the movie, it was more Bruce Wayne, which was pretty interesting to me. But, but I think when you get the right actor to play the part, that's huge. Mm-hmm. And I've always said if the person who's not in their character, like if Tony Stark is interesting as Iron Man, then you've got yourself a hit on your hands.
Yeah. And to be fair, Ben Affleck's Daredevil was done before Marvel got the rights to Daredevil back. So I will give them a pass on that because that was not their call. Oh, yeah.
Well, I got to tell you though, I watched the director's cut and it actually is a little better.
Oh yeah.
Not much, but.
Really? Oh God. I thought it was night and day actually, but.
It's the fight sequence, like with Elektra and the playground, and then it's just, yeah, anyway.
Well, okay, yeah, sure, I'll give it that. But it was like a cohesive film, which was not true of the theatrical cut of that one.
That's true.
So coming back to Zack Snyder's Justice League, I was completely set to hate this film, and within an hour I was completely bought into it. Although then once they started introducing Flash and Cyborg, and I was a little more, I don't know, but then I warmed up to it again by the end of it. Having said all that, I don't really like where at the very end Snyder threw in this nightmare sequence that wasn't even in his original cut, that he went and filmed specifically for this new 4-hour release. He throws in this nightmare sequence at the very end of the film. This is not really a big spoiler, it's just there's a nightmare that gets thrown in, and it's something that is to set you up for what he wanted to do with the Justice League sequels. And what I've read about plans for the Justice League sequels, much as I enjoyed Zack Snyder's Justice League, what he was doing with the nightmare sequence and where he was planning taking it with the sequels, I'm not crying about the fact that we didn't get any more Snyderverse than this.
I 100% agree. Yeah, don't watch the nightmare sequence, and the movie's great.
Wow, yeah. How long was it?
10 minutes.
Wow.
I don't know. It was. It felt an eternity, though, because I mean, the direction that he was going, it's God. There's got to be a reason why Warner said nah, because you're not just playing with characters; you're playing with merchandise. You're playing with. It's just a huge risk, and I would never have gone for that. And I'm okay with taking chance. It's like this. We all remember what if comic books were back in the old days with Marvel, mm-hmm. right? That's what this is. This is like a what if scenario, but on the grand scale of things and being accepted as canon almost. But is it canon or is it Snyder canon? I don't know. But and they haven't even introduced an alternative world yet, at least to my degree. But anyway, I'm glad that they're not going to do it. I know that there's been a huge movement for it. Let's make the Snyderverse exist. I had one on any part of that one. No.
Yeah.
So I agree with what you said, Noel.
Yeah. And the other thing, in addition to the plans that Snyder had for the Justice League sequels, something that he fought with the studio over and lost even in this theatrical cut is he was pushing to have, so Lois Lane begins this film in mourning because Superman died at the end of Batman versus Superman. She's in mourning, and Snyder's idea was that she winds up hooking up with Batman and that the two of them have a thing. And then there's this whole love triangle once Superman gets revived. And again, I'm just so glad that the studio said no to that and that he was never able to put that into his
okay, life. That I read an interview with Amy Adams, and she was talking about some craziness where she had a pregnancy test and something else in her drawer. And she's like, would I really have that? So it sounds like that they were angling for something. I'm like, no, that what? And I couldn't figure out where that would have been. But given what you just said about what they cut out,
it's a betrayal of Lois Lane's character to even do something like that. And it's the one thing that we'd always play around with the idea, like, God, what, can you imagine what if Superman lost his freaking mind? And I think that's kind of the precipice of this, is that, you know, what would drive Superman to truly lose his shit? You know, well, that would be Bruce Wayne.
That would do it. That would do it. And they never even touched on, because wasn't there also something with Batman and Wonder Woman? I mean, we have a comic book cover.
Batman really gets around that Justice League.
Superman, there's a comic book cover with Superman and Wonder Woman kissing while they're flying. And for the record, I'm not as big a DC fan as I am a Marvel fan, but even I know that Nightwing is the slut of the DC universe, you know?
Right. Well, you know, if you remember in Joss Whedon's version, there was that one scene where they got like a little flirty when he was like, oh yeah, I'm a little sore. And she pops his shoulder. If you remember that
was all right. Yeah. She undislocated his shoulder. Right.
Right. And they were like sharing a drink together. It felt very,
it felt like, weird. Where did she get the red robe from? I mean, seriously, where was that? Was that just in a closet in Batman's jet? Seriously?
That's what I meant. I mean, I think that from what I've read, there was a lots of things that she was not happy about with Joss Whedon's, the way he was trying to handle her character.
And given stuff that's come out since then about Joss's behavior all along. I just think
he's one of those tyrants on the set that you read about and it's his way or the highway. And he's definitely got an ego. I can tell you that. Just from reading excerpts. But again, that if he puts out the product, you know, the studios probably always look away from that. But now, I mean, I don't know. It's really interesting that the superior version all along was Snyder's. And maybe if all things be equal and Joss were given his own time and everything, I think we may see a different result, you know. But I do remember reading a little bit of his treatment of the Wonder Woman that got leaked a couple of years ago. And it was pretty interesting. For being such a, I don't know, it was never made, obviously, but it angered a lot of people the way he was treating Wonder Woman. But anyway,
I read his Wonder Woman script. It's just as well they didn't make it.
It's pretty. But I don't know where this will stand in the annals of time with just, like, is Warner Brothers, like, embarrassed by this? Do they really support? I mean, obviously they support it. They gave the money to finish it, but I'm just curious what this actually does with DC and the whole entire universe right now.
I mean, $70 million is not chump change. That's literally seven indie genre films.
Yeah, and that it's just right now. I think they're a mess right now with everything. I think other than the CW, which has the, you know, the cutesy Lois Lane and Batgirl and Supergirl, I think, but I don't watch those because they're just, not to sound like a snob, but usually TV related, the bar is so high now with the level of realism with CGI and everything. So, but I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see where Warner Brothers goes with their studio releases. You know,
I was hoping that with the consolidation of so much DC content on HBO Max, that they would give Swamp Thing another try, because that was excellent.
That's what I hear.
And just remember, they canceled it after the first episode.
Why?
They never really, I think it's budget reasons, because somebody miscalculated the tax breaks they were getting from Georgia. And there was a discussion like, well, if they miscalculated what it cost them to shoot in Georgia, why not pick up and move to North Carolina? Because North Carolina has swamps and some very healthy tax breaks for filming. But we'll never know now. But that entire series had some serious potential. And they canceled it after the first episode. They waited like 6 months and before all 10 episodes aired, I believe. And it's worth it. I don't know. What is it? What's the other one they're doing? Well, they're Batman. They're still going with Doom Patrol, you know?
Oh, that's right. But Robert Pattinson.
I've heard they did a good job on Doom Patrol. Mm-hmm. I had a chance to watch it.
Yeah, Doom Patrol is fun. I have not watched Teen Titans, so I cannot weigh in on that. But I have no interest in seeing Robert Pattinson's Batman. The trailer was interesting, and I'm just like, okay.
Well, I shouldn't get caught up in the fodder of Hollywood bullcrap, but when I read stories about he doesn't want to work out or he doesn't want to be the physical Batman, to me it's like, well, if I don't think he can kick my ass, because we all know Batman doesn't just win because of his ability to smooth talk people. I just think if you're not going to be a physical presence on the screen, at least the thing I kind of respect about Ben Affleck is the dude got buff. And because today, the modern day Batman is, you know, he's going to have to be able to handle himself in a fisticuff. I'm not expecting him to be like stacked with muscles or anything, but he's got to at least be physically, you know, impressive. And I'm sorry, the actors are not impressive. And I just think, I don't know if he's respecting the role the way it should be. I don't know.
Before we get too off topic, I'm a little curious. How did you feel the Snyder Cut? How did you feel about how Flash was handled? And we've already covered Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, but how in Cyborg? But how did you feel about Flash and Aquaman? How did you feel about how they were handled?
Actually, I still didn't feel like it didn't connect at all. They didn't really change with Aquaman a lot, other than a couple scenes. Flash, he didn't feel like such a wimp in this one. But I didn't, you know, it was okay, you know, but I wasn't moved like I was with Cyborg's backstory. I was engaged by that, man.
How does Flash's story tie into the developments with the Flash standalone movie that they're supposedly working on?
Well, here's the thing. They included a lot of his. There were a lot of scenes that were still left in Whedon's version. There was a couple cool scenes that were just kind of given, like here how he is as a person and the things he'll do to sacrifice, like save somebody. So you get a chance to see him and the powers, what he can do, and then you got a little more backstory about him and his relationship with his father. But you still never really got a chance to. They didn't really develop a whole lot from that. So. Where that next movie is with Flash, who knows? I mean, I didn't feel like it was I can't wait to see the next Flash movie. I certainly didn't feel that way about Flash at all.
Okay.
So, if anything, I left the movie or watching it. I was like, I definitely want to see Henry Cavill playing Superman again. I'm sorry. I like him as Superman. And
yep.
I don't think he's been given a fair share or a fair shake yet. I mean, you know, Man of Steel, yeah. But Batman versus Superman, that movie was more about let's get Batman and see if we can work him in. And of course, he had to share that with Justice League too. So, and he was hardly even in this movie, by that way. It was always talking about him and who he is and what he is, but he's not there. So I don't think Henry Cavill has really been given another follow-up movie the way he should be.
Yeah.
I want to see more Gal Gadot playing Wonder Woman again. Not looking at that awful 1980s with that movie, horrible. God, that was bad. I hated it. But anyway,
so many people I know who loved the first Wonder Woman,
which is me,
watched Wonder Woman 84 and go, what in the Sam Hill was that?
So painful. But anyway.
Yeah. What about you, Noah? What future DC movies are you looking forward to, either because of or in spite of Zack Snyder's Justice League?
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering the same thing myself. Certainly, the Zack Snyder cut of Justice League makes me a lot more interested in, well, I guess with the relationship the studio has developed, Ray Fisher developed with the studio, I don't know, though, we'll be seeing
we're not going to see a cyborg movie
soon, but that is definitely the character that was most enriched by the Snyder cut, I would say. Flash was definitely better, but still not to the point where I was like, oh boy, I can't wait to see a Flash movie with this version of the Flash. Now I'm just more kind of neutral about that. Aquaman, I went and watched Aquaman after seeing this, boy. And it was really sort of a come down.
So you hadn't seen Aquaman before?
Right, I hadn't seen James Wan's Aquaman. I watched the Snyder cut. And then I was on a roll, like, ooh, let's go. And then I watched Aquaman, and I was like,
I have mixed feelings about Aquaman. It's very interesting. I was looking forward to Aquaman. I watched Aquaman, and I had to wait and process it and watch it again. And then it confirmed. I'm like, yeah, the middle half of that movie could have gone away, and it would have been so much more fun.
Although I'll tell you what, again, I've only seen it one time, but the scene that I'm still left with was when he's in the depths of the water trying to, and you have those glowing fish underneath him, mm-hmm. You know, like all coming up with him. That was visually freaking cool.
Yeah. Everything after Arthur and Mira went into the trench to confront the huge monster from there on was awesome. Their chase through the desert there was good. The fight with Manta in that Italian town was good. That whole middle section where, I can't even remember his name. His brother is manipulating everybody to go to war to try to take over the seas. I'm like, that was all just snooze fest.
It felt like filler to me.
Contrived is the word I would use. Contrived.
It was an attempt to show this other possibility of who Aquaman's life is. And, you know, it was a weak attempt to create some more depth to the movie. And
he wasn't even a decent big bad. He was just a whiny crybaby. He was, I'm the king's son. I should have the power. Everybody follow me. I am Ocean Master. Oh, please go sit in a corner.
But that's the problem with lots of these movies. They always need a true villain, the one that can lay waste and you feel truly threatened by. And I think it's when that's the big problem a lot of these movies suffer from. You know, I mean,
but he had to lie and manipulate his way to do that. He had, the whole setup to get Mira's father on board into attacking the surface was a ploy. And it wasn't even a well-executed ploy, because how are humans from the surface just going to happen to know where this secret underground chamber was in order to fire a torpedo at it? Really?
That movie did close to $1 billion.
Really?
I think that's what I read. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So that explains why they're eager to do Aquaman 2. And you know what? I would watch an Aquaman 2 because
Okay, but let's be frank here. You got Jason Momoa playing Aquaman. How many? That's ticket sales right there. He's a good looking dude. All right.
He is, which is so, why, you know, a long time ago, I would have been on board for The Rock to be Batman, because that would have been awesome.
Well, but that's everything though, you know, and I think there are a lot of people that were drawn to him, you know, cause he's a lovable guy, you know, and I think in a different movie setting, it may be better. I just think, the back of that story was just really average. I was bored by that movie, to be honest with you. So, but Aquaman.
There's like a 40 minute stretch in the middle that I fast forward through every time. So yeah. I will not disagree with you entirely on that. But what are they doing a Green Lantern?
Wouldn't it be cool if they did it like a space opera, man? Not the Green Lantern from Earth. But Green Lantern, you know, because it's just a huge story.
Mm-hmm.
The Green Lantern animated was actually a really good series, and that's precisely what it was.
But see, that's what I loved about the Justice League in the beginning, when they were showing Dark, you know, this huge battle where it involved, you know, all backgrounds of people joined together to fight Darkseid, and you had like gods, you had, you know, and then you even had a Lantern core person there, because you see his ring, and then and then you see Thanos. Anyway, ever Thanos, Darkseid, that's cool. But yeah, I would love to see that myself. Just, you know.
Yeah, that was another thing that was a surprise about the Snyder Cut, was I heard those kind of elements were going to be in there, and I'm like, okay, yeah, so some sort of dumb fan service, whatever. But it really worked the way he pulled it together. It was like, yeah.
I was laughing, dude. It
really made me want to go see a Green Lantern Corps movie after that.
Dude, I was laughing like a kid, going, oh my God, this is so cool. You know, I think your comparison to Lord of the Rings was perfect. Just how it
starts off. Yeah, that's what I heard. That opening montage with everybody fighting together was just like the opening montage of Fellowship of the Ring, where you see all of the elves, all of the humans fighting together, getting literally slaughtered by Sauron's forces until, you know, the ring gets cut off his hand. But that whole epic scene, I've heard so many people compare the opening of Zack Snyder's Justice League to that. I'm like, you know what? If he took inspiration from that, props to him, because that is something epic and awesome to try to emulate.
It was well done. I just from the CGI aspects, there were these little pockets of characters like, oh my God, that's I think that's who that is, or, you know, that's Hercules, or I just think that was so cool and a wonderful way to start this movie, because it was supposed to be a grand scale movie. And so, yeah, I just, like I said initially at the start of this conversation, I really hopefully one day can see a documentary about this, you know, no hurt feelings, just see the truth behind it, because that's, I think people can learn from something like this. I mean, there's circumstances behind why movies don't work. They're very rarely just does the result of a movie that had to go through that many changes end up as being as good as it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
cool.
Yeah. No.
So any
really surprised.
So any final thoughts?
For me, it was interesting dilemma for me, because I'm not the hugest Zack Snyder fan. He's got exciting visuals. I would love to hire him as like my action coordinator for something. But I was actually surprised at how he's able to that you could feel the passion with the character development. You know, there was like it just didn't feel like a Zack Snyder movie from that point of view. So if anything, you know, like maybe he's growing now. I don't know. But it does make me give pause when I start suddenly thinking about Zack Snyder as a director. So,
So overall, this is someone who was disappointed with the original Justice League or ambivalent. You would recommend them check this version out just because it's a new take on the story that should have been the first take.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The thing that I guess in terms of a final thought I might have, one thing that came through for me seeing, you know, of course, it helps because that the film had the time to breathe, being 4 hours long. But I think that the team that Zack Snyder built, the Justice League team he built, was actually, in the end, a more cohesive unit than the Avengers were. The Avengers were sort of antagonists that, in the MCU, I'm not talking about in the comics, I'm saying in the MCU, they were really sort of antagonists that had to come together against the common foe. Justice League, there was a certain amount of that, but really once everybody bonded, they were bonded. You felt like you were watching a team and that they were a cohesive team. And that was my favorite part about Snyder's cut. It was, I felt more inspired by it to some extent. Once everything came together and they were really working together as a team, it came through for me. And I think that those actors and Snyder were bonding together at the time that they were making what they were making. And I think that that feeling comes through in the final product as well.
That's a good point, man. I would like to go back and watch, well, it would suffer, I should say, Joss Whedon's take, because that's true. I mean, their rapport and working with Snyder was probably more warm and real with Snyder than it is with Joss Whedon. And so I'm sure that affected the way it came out in their performance. That's a good point.
Cool. Well, there you have it. Zack Snyder's Justice League gets thumbs up, especially in light of the improvements made over what we had in the theatrical version. Noah, Darren, thank you for your insights today and for sharing my joy and hatred of a lot of things DC and Marvel.
Well, thanks, Summer.
Yeah, it's always nice.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Hi, thanks for listening to Slice of Sci-Fi. This is Noah Richman talking about the movie Voyagers. It's the latest film from director Neil Berger, somebody that has a bit of a history with what they might term the YA genre of, I guess, would that be a fiction genre these days? But the director that did the movie Divergent. And this is the latest film, also aimed somewhat at that audience, somewhat younger age audience. But what it's doing is it's taking the theme of classic Lord of the Flies theme and putting it into space. And so what you have is a spaceship with a bunch of young people and young, I guess, probably like teens, early 20s, traveling through space. They're supposed to be colonizing a new planet when they get to the new planet, and to keep everybody under control between here and the final destination where they're going to be old enough to be grandparents. The idea is to have them ingest this blue substance that keeps everybody under control, keeps them docile, keeps their potentially violent urges from being able to resurface, just so things don't get too out of hand during the course of the trip. However, these people are trained to be scientists and engineers, and so some of them manage to figure out what the blue is doing to them, and that they don't actually want to be on it. So then the story becomes what happens when you have these people growing up in space that really haven't been socialized and aren't part of the broader world, suddenly discovering their sexuality and violent impulses. So the film is pretty interesting in the way that it's shot. It has an interesting soundtrack, and the mixture of kind of bright neon-like visuals with this very Philip Glass type music is definitely visually catching. An interesting audio auditory and visual experience. It's also a movie that the setup was somewhat more interesting than I thought it might be. In a way, it is kind of a throwback to classic 1950s sci-fi, and it does somewhat suffer from it's kind of like classic 50s sci-fi, and on the other hand, it seems to be trying to be a little more heady, and in that respect, it doesn't entirely work. But nevertheless, I was finding the setup somewhat interesting of how do we take this setting and go somewhere with it, you know, take it in an interesting direction. Ultimately, though, the film really winds up being pretty disappointing because it's very uneven. It gets too long. It drags. The characters really aren't developed very well. There's just kind of a shallow quality when it comes to the character development. You have some action sequences, particularly towards the end, where it's a Hollywood production and they feel like they can't just have some straight on action. They have to make it bigger and better and drag it out. And altogether, by the end of it, I really just felt like it's not very effective. It's a movie where you have a character who's clearly a villain, but the thing is that this villainy is supposed to be coming out when he gets off of the blue and suddenly his violent impulses are coming out. But even before he gets off the blue, he's like that. You really don't see him evolve to being kind of under control, and now suddenly he's violent. And that's largely true for a lot of the performances. You don't really see huge differences in the before and after. And I guess that comes back to what I was saying about the development not particularly being there either when it comes to the characters. So I've certainly sat through worse. It's not, you know, altogether the most terrible thing. It has some interesting pieces of questioning about human nature and some interesting ways that it's constructed with how it's shot and the choices of sound. But overall, it's really too long. It really drags. It's uneven. And my overall score is, I would say, it's pretty mediocre film. So I would give it 2 out of 5 stars.
Again, I'd like to thank Noah and Darren for their insights and opinions on Zack Snyder's Justice League. The fact that they sat through all 4 hours, I can't complain about that because I myself gleefully, happily watched all 4 hours of Never Sleep Again, the Nightmare on Elm Street documentary. 3 hours, 58 minutes, or it was 3 hours, 59 minutes, I don't recall. But it was like a frog's hair short of 4 hours. And that Blu-ray was delightful. And honestly, I had a lot of fun with that Blu-ray. And I think I watched parts of it again when it hit Netflix. Or am I thinking of the Friday the 13th documentary, which itself was also quite the long tome. What was it? Crystal Lake Memories, that's it. So I can't fault people asking incredulously, how in the world did you sit through 4 hours of that story? And I eventually will watch it. It's just not high up on my list. And to be completely fair, if they did a 3.5 hour long air cut of the first Suicide Squad, I would want to eventually see it, but it wouldn't be a priority. And yes, for the record, I enjoyed the first Suicide Squad better than Dawn of Justice and Justice League. Dawn of Justice, I can't watch. I lasted maybe 20 minutes. Justice League, I at least watched all the way through, and I don't know. What does it say when someone like me, who's a casual DC fan and a diehard Marvel fan, is burned out on these superhero movies? Maybe they need to slow down. The TV shows are a good idea. I want to see Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I definitely want to see Moon Knight. And here's the funny thing. The next MCU feature film I want to see is Doctor Strange. I'm not interested in the Black Widow movie. It's, you know, by all accounts, probably 5 years too late. But there you have it. It's very frustrating. I mean, I realize that the studios are throwing big money at these films to get them made. And I'll be the first to say, I loved Wonder Woman. I don't know what happened with Wonder Woman 84. A little disappointed in that. I'm not in a hurry to watch James Gunn's Suicide Squad. I mean, I loved what he did with Guardians of the Galaxy, and I was a hard sell on that. I was hoping that the team to take the MCU into space would have been the Starjammers, because how perfect a connection to the X-Men would that have been? But that didn't happen. And I really, really liked the first Guardians of the Galaxy. The second one was fun, but not as delightful as the first one. Yeah. And I'd also like to thank Noah for his insights on the new science fiction feature, Voyagers, which you can catch, I believe it's limited run in theaters and also VOD. So if Noah's review intrigued you, sparked a little bit of curiosity, go right ahead, check it out. And what do you think about the Zack Snyder Justice League project? Because a 4-hour movie is a project. It's not a regular film. That's a project. Let me know. Send in your questions, your comments to summer@sliceofscifi.com. And you can leave your opinions, your observations, your questions in the comment section on this podcast episode on the website, sliceofscifi.com. Come on by. Start up a conversation. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Podchaser, the new Podchaser, new-ish, rather, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio. And you can leave a review for us on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, and on Podchaser. help raise our profile so other people can find this show. I think what Podchaser is doing is kind of interesting. They're trying to be the IMDb for podcasts, which is kind of a cool thing. And yes, you could leave ratings or a review on Babylon Podcast and Writers After Dark if you happen to be over there and are feeling in the mood. You can also chat with me on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi. I will answer questions most of the time if I see them. The obvious topics are science fiction, horror, Babylon 5, Star Wars, Premier League soccer, Liga MX soccer, baseball. Baseball has started up again, and this is a good thing. We shall see what happens. I'm a fan of the Orioles. I'm a fan of the Mets. I became a fan of the Dodgers, and I belatedly became a fan, casual fan, of the Nationals. But the Orioles and Mets are nearest and dearest to my heart. And who knows? Maybe I can start talking baseball somewhere. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently supporting our efforts here at the Slice of Sci-Fi Universe. Your pledges through Patreon, your donations through PayPal really do help keep things running around here. So I am grateful to all of you who are supporting for that. If you'd like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Come on by, pick a tier, and every month I pick an email address out of the hat, and that lucky person gets to choose a Blu-ray, a DVD, a 4K, or a book from the stash of items I have here. And it's my way of saying thank you for your support. You guys get first dibs on all the goodies I get here. And if you'd rather lend a hand every now and then, the link to use is paypal.me/sci-fi summer. But that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.